for those that want to get on the radical midwife path, we are enrolling for the Indie Birth Midwifery School once again here through July. We won't be enrolling again until next year. So this is your chance for 2024 to become an Indie Birth Midwifery School student and to begin creating yourself as the radical midwife you know you're meant to be. Check out IndieBirthMidwiferySchool.org and get your application in today. We can't wait to meet you. My name is Maren Green. I walk the path of a sacred midwife, mother, and spiritual gangster. My role is a keeper of wisdom, of the ancient ways of being. I trust Source as my ultimate guide. There is nothing more radical than feeling and listening to your own soul. On this podcast, you'll hear about my real life as a mother to 10, a sacred birth worker, a priestess, and a creator of the new earth. I see my life purpose in my children, in leading the sovereign and radical birth community of Indie Birth, and in embodied learning and living. Join me in the remembering of who you really are. You are powerful. Welcome to the podcast. I am back and comfortable in my own body again after the travel. I do want to share a little bit about the Spain trip, I think. It's been a couple of weeks now that I've been home, and I had wanted to share more last week, but truly, the time difference, the lack of sleep, really, I don't think it was so much the time difference, because the time difference was so severe, almost 12 hours, I think it's 11 hours. It was so severe that I was just upside down. My body was just really confused. So it is nice to be on the other side of that and to be feeling pretty great and very rested and in the middle of an ovulation phase, which always brings some creativity, more energy, often clarity. So I'm glad I waited. I definitely want to share a little bit about that trip, because I think there are some really cool messages that came through. And then I want to go on today to a very fun topic about the first bleeding, the first blood, the first period, the first menstrual cycle, the first moon cycle, whatever you want to call it. Because we've had another girl pass through that gateway in our family this week. And it made me realize that I've never done a podcast on this topic. So I'm really excited today. I'm feeling really good and really excited. And truth be told, there is a new boba tea place I've discovered near my house, somewhat near my house. I love boba tea. I did not realize how much I did until I moved to Hawaii. And it's a silly thing, but it also is something that I find a lot of joy in, actually, as silly as that may sound, and have kind of cut back in a way, which also feels good. I kind of was going crazy there for a while, but I also let myself just ride that out. I find that any like really stringent controls for me around things like that often end up feeling like a lot of drama. So, you know, if it was something harmful, perhaps that would be different. But because it's just boba tea and, you know, really that's a matter of caffeine, I have found my groove and I'm kind of at a once a week boba schedule right now. So that happened to be today for whatever reason. And that kind of caffeine feels so different in my body, actually, than coffee caffeine. It doesn't make me feel jittery or, you know, any of the weird ways that caffeine from coffee can do on my body. So that's also an influence today in feeling just really excited and chatty and connected. I think there's definitely a new connection I feel to source, to the land, to the messages that are coming through for me personally and the ones I'm here to share since I've been to Spain. So that's a really nice segue into this trip that was gifted to me in a sense, because I don't go anywhere. I don't travel a lot. And I've realized just in the last couple of years with moving to Kentucky and now being here in Hawaii that I truly am led. There are no accidents. I don't take random trips. So when the invite came up to go to Spain, both with my daughter and to facilitate a class for midwives there, I knew that I had to take it, even though I have shared along the way that part of it felt really inconvenient. And it was inconvenient in a lot of ways. I had to leave my family here, or chose to. And it was just inconvenient having that long of a trip and going through that. I think it's just really hard on the body. It is. It's definitely hard on my body. I don't like being out of sorts like that. I don't like my sleep messed up. I don't like not having access to good food. So it was definitely inconvenient, but I knew it was a trip I was meant to take. And I didn't know why. And in some ways, I don't have a concrete list of why, but I was shown some of the energies that still needed, or still need, perhaps, integration in my own body, on my own path. I'm going to share some of those. The trip itself was really rejuvenating and fun. My friends Sam and Petra came along, and we all shared a space for the week. So Amelia and myself as well. We had all four of us in what was probably a really old apartment in Barcelona. It was really beautiful and renovated, but my sense is it was probably from the 1800s, as much of that city is quite old. And obviously Europe being so much older than any of our US cities, that definitely had an influence for sure on the energies that are there and the energies that we felt. Amelia and I arrived after Sam and Petra, a whole day after, and we were really exhausted. So much fun was to be had, though. I mean, there's really nothing like hanging out with your women friends. And I don't think any of us, you know, the women that were present there in Barcelona, or maybe you listening, I don't think any of us get a huge chance to do that. It's really rare, right, to leave the families behind and to just have your woman friends around. And that's a whole other topic. Like, it's beautiful and sacred and silly. I think we all felt like we shared a lot of laughs. You know, there's a lot of energies present, frankly, with women when you're in the same space and, you know, things come up and triggers get triggered and, you know, normal life happens. And I all think that's so beautiful. You know, I think when women get together in the past, I've disregarded, in a sense, some of the uncomfortableness that can come even from friends in a space. And, you know, I'm talking about past retreats we've held. We held one in Minnesota a bunch of years ago. So I have lots of experience in a way living with women for short amounts of time. Even in college, it goes way back, as many of us often do. And yeah, I guess I see that with a new perspective now that I'm older. So, you know, lots can come up, lots of great conversation. And like I said, for each of us, and I can't speak for anyone but me, of course, but I think the city we were in and the reasons we went brought up things for each of us. So for me, definitely, you know, the witch wound was present. And I know that to be true for at least Sam and my daughter. We talked a little bit about that. And I know it came up in the one-day workshop that we held for the midwives in this space, in the same apartment we were renting. So there's so much to say about that, in a sense, and also so little, because each of us has our own bodily experience of what that meant. So for me, the first night I was there, I was greeted, and that's kind of in quotes and not completely not sarcastic, greeted by a spirit at night that kind of wanted to attack me, which is not the most fun, and something I've had happen over the years and through my life, but I haven't had happen in a while. So some might consider it a psychic attack, and it's basically one of those dreams where there's some kind of entity or spirit that, you know, is in your field and kind of renders you powerless. So in my opinion, it's not something to be too scared of. I don't think, you know, harm comes, at least it hasn't to me. So real physical harm never seems to come of those, but they're scary. It's not nice to sort of be violated in your own astral space. And maybe in your physical space, you know, it might be something that's actually present in the room, but this particular spirit made itself known. And that was my first night in Barcelona. I think Amelia that first night as well said that she felt a dark presence kind of following her to the bathroom at night. And so when I woke up the next morning, I really decided I have no tolerance for that. And that's generally what I've come to over the years when I've had those experiences as a child. And I remember having a psychic attack like that when I was probably like only 4 or 5. When you're a child, it's just plain old scary and you wish you could scream and run into your mom's room. But by nature of how those things usually work, like I said, you kind of freeze. You're kind of frozen in the astral space. So now that I'm older and I know how to deal with it, I don't put up with that bullshit. It's not okay with me. So I bought some sage that day in Barcelona and saged the whole apartment and my room and everybody's room with their permission. And I personally wasn't bothered again. I think some of the other ladies had some of their own experiences, but I personally was left alone, which was nice because that really wasn't why I went there. And the trip for me unfolded very beautifully and organically. The city of Barcelona felt dark. And I don't mean that as like a comment on, I don't know, like the beauty of it and the ancient history, although there's lots of dark ancient history in Barcelona, in Spain in general. And I was aware of that, but I didn't go with the intention of connecting with that per se. I went to enjoy and have a good time and spread my own wisdom there. But I couldn't ignore the history, the persecutions and a lot that I probably don't even know about that went on this land. I did feel it, as I think we all did, this kind of vampiric energy. That's how I would describe it. So it's a very beautiful city. We had a lot of fun. We walked around. We ate lots of amazing food. But just kind of this background current of, again, what I would call vampiric energy. Just really dark and ancient and kind of Illuminati-ish, you know, if you want to bring it up to date. But I don't think that's the surprising fact at all. I don't think that's surprising. And I know that other people have picked up on that as well. But it was there. I don't think we, you know, only paid attention to that, but it definitely was there. And yeah, that was kind of cool to experience, keeping it at a distance. We were brought to a really beautiful little fishing town up north, close to France, actually, by the beautiful Marichelle, who is a friend who was born and raised in that area and was also the translator for my workshop. We got to know her. She got to know us. And she's just really beautiful and loving, and took her whole day on Sunday when we were there to drive us 1.5 hours to this beautiful little town. I really felt connected to the land there. And it might be it's because I had a chance to take off my shoes and socks and put my feet on the earth and get my feet in the ocean and on the sand. I realized how much I was craving that in Barcelona. And that's just not a thing you do in the city. It's, you know, where to do it. Although we did find a park there as well. So that's something that has shifted for me over the years. I've lived in New York City. I lived in Chicago. I don't remember at those points in my life needing the earth's energy as much as I do now. So it was really nice to go to this fishing town and eat traditional food and walk through the town and, again, be near the water. And this ocean was completely different, of course, than where I live now, where the Pacific is. So it was really fun and just interesting to communicate with the water and have it be such a different energy. All ocean is not ocean. I was informed this is a sea, which is different than an ocean. And all in all, I really felt deeply connected to the land, almost like the whole trip resulted in this experience. That was why, one reason anyway, that I was brought to this land, not to walk around the city, but to experience this little town and have memories pop up. And for me, the memories were highly positive. I felt connected and remembering maybe my time in a town like that, or maybe it was that one, I'm really not sure, where I was the village healer, where I was the midwife or the medicine woman. And again, that felt really positive. So even though Spain has a lot of history around witch persecution and all of that, I didn't viscerally feel that in my body while I was on the land. I know there's more to come in Spain, so stay tuned. I think I will go back, probably. Not super soon. The trip was too long for that. But maybe in a couple of years, maybe next year, to lead a retreat there. That is in the works. However, just briefly sharing that on my way home, leaving the Barcelona airport, I had to then transit through Munich, Germany. My experience in both of those airports leaving Europe was less positive. And I'm not going to bore you with the actual story of it all. I'll just say that it was an intense emotional experience because the way it resonated in my body was the persecution, was the witch wound that I was kind of proud of myself in a sense for, you know, getting out without really feeling that, right? It was a pretty nice trip to the countryside. It felt very powerful. However, leaving Europe, I could almost feel the tendrils trying to grab me or keep me there or remind me of what I've forgotten maybe or where I've been. So the resonance in my body was one of needing permission, of kind of being hunted, of screwing up, of being seen. And again, this kind of came through, you know, people and stories in these airport experiences that were very odd because I'm sure not everyone has those experiences. Because I'm doing somatic work and because I am tuned in to the overall messages of the universe, I knew that it wasn't literal. So these people that appeared before me, these custom agents, it really wasn't about them, right? It was about them being the messenger and holding this vibration that I suppose I needed to experience again. It was very disconcerting, and I won't lie, I could not wait to get home. I was anxious at that point to leave Europe, to get out of there. I shared a little bit last week that my computer was harmed, and I don't consider that an accident. I had a very intense customs experience just transiting through Germany, which is very odd to me because I wasn't actually in Germany, right? Like, I came through the airport only to come out the other side to board my flight to enter the US. So it was all very odd, but in transitioning through that customs, my computer was harmed. That's all I can say, because that's all I know. All I know is it worked before then and it never worked after then. So again, it's kind of funny, other than having to buy a new computer, which wasn't the best news. But something definitely happened there. And yeah, I was made to sit with some of those vibrations and resonances. And again, I don't think that's an accident. I think that's ultimately for my growth. It was really intense. It was really intense, especially on a long flight home, to be feeling the way I felt, even some physical symptoms in my body that I knew were related. So life is an adventure. And when you're a powerful creature, you know, you have these kind of things happen, and they're all a way of growing. They're all an opportunity to grow stronger in our power. So ultimately, I was grateful for them. But again, I won't lie, I was very grateful to see the sign upon arriving in this country. There's a lot that's wrong with the U.S., but I was so happy to see the welcome to the United States and to go through customs and to feel welcome, actually. You know, I know that's not everyone's experience, especially if you're not from this country. I know the U.S., you know, has the reputation it does, and not always nice or welcoming to people from other places, but I felt very welcomed upon getting home. And yeah, I experienced a gratitude really for this place that I do call home, for whatever bizarre reasons I chose in this lifetime. I really felt happy to be back. And, you know, my sense of safety even was increased. So that was that. It was an intense trip home. And I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I knew there would be experiences that would come. And on returning home here to Hawaii, feeling even more welcome. The Honolulu airport is just really adorable. It is really old. It's like half outside. It's kind of crusty in a sense, as many things here are. But over the loudspeaker, they continually speak in Hawaiian, and it all just felt really comforting. My ride home even, you know, was a Uber native Hawaiian guy, super friendly and welcoming. And it all just felt so great. It felt so great to be back home with my family and my own bed, and here on this island, which we presently do call home, and which very much feels that way. That is a really awesome thing. And so I'm feeling just really connected to this land in a different way. It's almost like weaving a tapestry, right? Like our life is that. That is what we are doing. And when we go to a new place or have a new experience that's full of growth, it's like we're weaving that in. And then, you know, we're still weaving. We're still connecting the dots, and the thread is one. And now I'm here, and there's something that wove it all so much more deeply into my own body. That's the best I can describe it. So thanks for listening to that. It was a 22-minute review of my trip to Spain. All right, I'm on to talking about the first blood today, because my third daughter recently passed through that threshold, and I am selfishly so glad that she waited. Her body waited until I was home. I would have been so sad to miss it. She was so excited, and I think that's a really cool part of the way this experience has looked for my daughters thus far. She was so excited, she woke me up in the middle of the night. And of course, I was sleeping and I wasn't quite sure what was going on and what was the matter. So it was a relief to me as well that nothing was the matter. She woke me because she was so excited to see that first blood. Of course, I think back to my own entry into womanhood, and I hold space for you to do the same. Maybe that's a brief reflection. Maybe that's turning off the podcast and remembering your own first blood story. Maybe that's a meditation. Maybe that's a dream. Who knows what that is for you? But I highly recommend at some point, whether you have daughters or not, when you feel the space and internal support in recalling your first blood. For many women, it's not a memory that is very prominent because it's something our culture, as many of us would agree, has just taught us to really ignore or not pay a lot of attention to, or worse, have shame or embarrassment around and just kind of shove it down. I'll never forget when I taught at a women's retreat about 8 years ago in Canada. Gosh, I can't believe it's been that long. In fact, that was the last time I left the country. We, at this retreat, were invited to sit in circle in this beautiful yurt on a lake, I believe, that we were staying on. And in this circle, women were invited to go around the circle and share about their first bleeding experience. I, of course, don't remember everyone's share, but there were very few women that shared that told the story as a powerful initiation. If my memory serves, most women shared their experience with some heaviness, some tears, maybe some sadness, right? Not just in the lack of sacredness that they remember, but probably, like me, because it wasn't treated as anything special. I'm just reflecting on that experience more now and how powerful it was to hold space for all of the stories. And I think that's really important as we hold space for our daughters, or maybe it's our nieces or our granddaughters, whoever, that we take a little bit of time and reflect and allow ourselves to feel whatever we felt, whatever we feel now. I still find that healing. I find that with each daughter that goes through this threshold, that I am brought back. I am brought back to my own experience, and it still needs tending to. It still needs a hug. I still need to hold my 13-year-old self with love and compassion, because my experience was not sacred. It wasn't awful. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't super memorable. My experience was waking up on a Saturday morning and realizing that I was bleeding. And I knew what it was. Some girls don't, right? Some girls literally do not know what's happening to them. No one has ever had that talk. And as I'm telling this, I am having flashbacks of my mother taking me aside for this talk. I think we had lunch sort of awkwardly. And so I am grateful. I am grateful for that. I am grateful I was somewhat prepared. I wasn't scared. I wasn't shocked. But on that Saturday morning, my mother was not home. And I didn't want to share that with my father. I didn't feel comfortable. I didn't want him to know. And so I went to my neighbor's house. Gratefully, my neighbor, Katie, was about the same age and had received her first blood before me. And I don't remember what I said, but obviously just got her support, probably got a pad from her. And I don't really remember much after that. I don't remember confiding in my mother. I don't remember going to get pads. I really don't remember. Again, the feelings weren't super intense either way, but were full of some embarrassment for sure. I was the older of my sister and I, So I didn't have her. I didn't have her company at that point. And reflecting on my teenage years in general, as far as bleeding went, I gratefully, again, didn't think it was abnormal. I didn't think it was necessarily gross. You know, I don't know. I thought it was just normal-ish. But it really wasn't met with an embrace. I wasn't met with a celebration or really anything at all. And I never really thought about it. I never really thought about it as far as it being anything special or any kind of initiation into womanhood or, you know, that it meant that I was now fertile. I could now have a baby. That probably would have made me laugh back then at 13 or 14. But that really wasn't part of the conversation. And through my teenage years, I remember just kind of not having it be a big deal. And perhaps that's a good thing. I wasn't someone that was super physically uncomfortable. I'm still not with bleeding. I don't really get lots of cramps or, you know, some people are incapacitated. There are a lot of women out there where having their bleeding time is just really awful and rough. And so thankfully, mine in my teenage years and even now has never been a big deal, but again, wasn't met with excitement or wonder and was something we really didn't talk about in my family. We really didn't talk about it. And the only thing I remember is it kind of being used as an excuse sometimes, which, you know, I definitely think there's something to the hormones and the way it all flows and the fact that before we bleed, we do often want to be left alone. And there's great reason for that. But that's the only other memory I have is some kind of teenage issue with my parents and my mom, I think, kind of using it to explain to my dad maybe why I was having a teenage moment. I don't blame my mother at all. I think she did the best she could with what she had. I don't think, and I know almost for sure, that nothing was passed down to her, that I came from a long line of Catholic women who didn't even talk about pregnancy and loss, as far as I can tell, that it was very hush-hush. And certainly sex and bleeding, never, 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 never. And my mom did the best she could. So I never got the sex talk, which I think is still sort of amazing. How is a person expected to, you know, not only learn from their elders, which is super important, but how are they expected to have support growing into womanhood around bleeding, around sex, around all of these really natural and normal parts of life if the topic is never brought up? I made a firm promise to myself as a very young mother. My very first baby was a daughter. And I made this promise that I would try to do better. And again, not because I think my mother did a horrible job, but because it was so in her conditioning, obviously. It was so in the programming of that era, even, to not talk about these things. And I think Jason and I, in some ways, and we laugh about it, have gone out of our way to make all of these parts of living in a human body completely natural and normal to the best of our ability. From a very young age, we've always talked about these things. And bleeding, whenever I have, you know, month to month, I've skipped a lot of cycles, of course, with so many pregnancies, but whenever I've had the opportunity in bleeding to share it with a kid of any sex, of a young age, right, that comes into the bathroom, it's just normal. So Rumi, even now, Cove and Deva, if they come into the bathroom when I'm bleeding, they know what's happening. They know what a pad is. They know that blood comes. And when it comes, it's because you're not pregnant and, you know, it only lasts for when it does. And it's not scary. This is normal. As women, it's just something that we are allowed to experience. It's a really beautiful thing. And I think that is my best sage advice, in a sense, if you have young children and that feels right to you. And of course, it might not feel right if you weren't raised in that way either. So that's one of those, you know, opportunities in our own bodies to feel through our own triggers, our own wounding, our own traumas. Because I think something like bleeding every month is really not a big deal. And so everybody has their own level of comfort, but certainly there are still many families and many people that have chosen, and maybe not consciously, I mean, I can't say, maybe it's very conscious to not bring that to their children, I don't know. But I feel it is a huge disservice to future generations to not talk about the way our bodies work. And I would almost say, I think it's ridiculous to not. There's all kinds of other ways our bodies work. We breathe air, right? Food comes in, food comes out. All of these things. And, you know, in some ways, excuse me, they fit into this category of shame around the body. And again, everybody has their own experience, their own trauma. What I have tried my best to bring to the forefront to my children is that it's all normal. And sure, some of it's private. Some of it happens, you know, in a space where we're either alone or with our partner or, you know, with our family. Some of these bodily functions aren't meant to just be public display for the world. Obviously, there are boundaries, there are limits. But for bleeding, I really have tried. So I think I've mainly succeeded, at least in making that a topic of awareness in our household. And, you know, Amelia let us in many years ago with her first cycle. And of course, I have the blessing and honor and privilege of having many daughters, six to be exact. So I get many chances at this. And with Amelia, I do remember excitement. I do remember this degree of acceptance, but we certainly have been working on the way we handle this in our family because we do have so many daughters. So with Amelia and her being the first, I do remember that she was a little embarrassed, honestly, to be the first, right? And she has brothers and she has younger sisters. And I think that feels really normal too. When you're the first, it's just like, oh boy, you know, how do we handle this? And over the years, as she's had now two sisters below her go through this threshold, it is beyond normal in our house. It is a regular piece of conversation to know who's bleeding, to know who's ovulating. It's kind of funny how just common it is. And the boys too, you know, are aware. They know what a cycle is. They know mostly how it works. And it's not something that is seen, again, as gross or weird. In fact, I am so proud of my girls because I think together, right? Girls together are always more powerful in a sense. They have really transformed any kind of dynamic of it being weird or embarrassing together because they're in it together. And, you know, if it's a cool thing to be going through, then they're going to make it even cooler. So, like I said, it's very common conversation to know where people are at in their cycle, you know, just going to buy pads or tampons or whatever people do. And, oh, I can't swim because I'm bleeding. Or, oh, should I go to the gym? What do you think? You know, I'm supposed to start bleeding tomorrow. And, oh, my boobs get so achy when I'm about to bleed. This is all just what's happening all day long here. So if you don't have teenage daughters, this is a beautiful thing, I think, to look forward to. And of course, if you have more than one girl, I think it's even better because, again, they're kind of a team in it and they really flaunt their womanhood in a very powerful way and a silly way and, you know, a connective way. And I think that's great. Like, that's how sisterhood, I think, is formed. So literal sisterhood, these girls are sisters, but out with our other women friends, you know, I thought of that even in being in Barcelona. You know, like women just showering together and women sitting in a sauna together. Like, I think this is what we were made to do. I I feel comfortable with it. You know, it's not that every woman has to, and I'm not sure that, you know, that has to be everyone's goal. But I think there is just such beauty in women sharing these experiences of, yeah, we're all in slightly different human bodies as women, but they're all beautiful. And of course, I feel that way. I have had the privilege and honor of witnessing, you know, so many beautiful and different woman bodies over the years in pregnancy and in birth and in all their rawness, all their nakedness, all their bleeding and fluid leaking from here and there. So I'm kind of an odd person, perhaps, although you might fit in since you're listening to this podcast. But I have brought that to my daughters. I wholeheartedly believe that. And I'm so grateful to all of my time in birth for instilling that in me. You know, there's just nothing gross to me about any of it. And I know that's, you know, it's weird at times, even to my husband, who doesn't, of course, think the female body is gross by any stretch. But he is sometimes just amazed at my ability to, I don't know, just like, I don't have any barriers around being with any of that. So again, birth is a great example, right? There's poop and there's pee and there's all kinds of stuff. And I don't flinch. I really never have for whatever reason. I've always just embraced kind of like that rawness of the woman and her experience. So my work in birth, I'm sure, has influenced my mothering. Of course it has. And that's just the way we are here in our family. Kind of nothing is off limits in that sense. And I think that is just something that will continue to influence the, let's see, how many girls do I have left? Three girls left that will pass through this sacred blood mystery of the first blood. And yeah, I guess as each of them pass through, it's only going to become more of a club. It's only going to become more accepted and more welcoming. And again, I absolutely love that. I feel just really blessed to be in this situation as the matriarch and to see not just this for my own eyes and my own heart and my own ears and in my own body, but to know that we are shifting generational trauma. We are shifting generational patterns and beliefs and hangups and shame around our bodies. We are doing that actively in our family every day. And that doesn't just transform the future, right? So I'm sure my kids will have kids. It not only makes it better and easier for them, but I do believe it heals the generations that come before. So we are doing great work in our family. And all of us, all of you out there, whether you have young daughters and this is something you're looking forward to, or even if you have older girls, maybe they've already gone through this and you're feeling like you want to backtrack a little or, you know, have a ceremony or ritual, go for it. Any amount of integration and healing we can all do, both individually in our families and collectively in this culture, really provides healing and power for women going forward. And I've always said this phase of life, this blood initiation is so powerful. It's not just because it is amazing, right? It's amazing of the human body to do what it does, to be able to bear children. It's really just inconceivable that we don't need instruction, that this just happens. So there's so much miracle and mystery there with this first blood and so much possibility and potential. But of course, being in birth work, it reminds me just how vital it is for this kind of shift to start happening on a larger scale. All kinds of women are confused and disconnected and scared of pregnancy and birth. And I've always said that it starts way before then. It doesn't mean we can't work with women in pregnancy who have not embraced their bodies. I think there's a lot of work that pregnancy brings right to our doors. But ideally, it starts when children are little. It starts with feeling in their bodies and, you know, accepting them and understanding them and listening and all of this great stuff. But of course, the first blood is a huge opportunity for expansion later in life and really influences the birth and pregnancy process. It's been said, and I don't know by who, I would tend to give this credit to Jane Hardwick Collins, but it has been said that the way we approach our first bleed and the way that is either embraced or pushed away is the same way we will be in our first birth experience. And I think she said that. I'm going to give her credit, but it makes so much sense. And I think it goes even farther than that. I think the way we are in our first blood initiation probably dictates the way we are as a mother. It probably dictates the way we'll be in menopause. It's the underlying belief system that's set in those moments around being a woman. Is being a woman disgusting and shameful and something to be hid? Is our power meant to be, you know, thrown away every month? Or is being a woman something that is life-giving, powerful, full of so much joy and vitality? I would love for you to sit with that. And I'm feeling that just so in my own heart. I'm really feeling just that connection to this wisdom that has been shared and known by women for women for as long as we've been on this earth. And really, it's only recently, right? In the big scope of cosmic timing, it's really only recently that there has been this disconnect, that, you know, the red thread has been snipped, that we've forgotten. So I think that's great news. It doesn't take that much to remember in our own bodies, this beauty and power that is blood. Blood is life. There is nothing more life-giving than menstrual blood. It's true. When there's bleeding, there's not a life growing, but with each blood is the potential for the next cycle, right? So it's the death that also includes life in it. It is the epitome of the death and rebirth cycle. Every time we see blood, it is death and it is a hope for new life. And even if we're not hoping for new life in a baby, we are in that part of our cycle where there's a rest and there's a knowing that the old is being shed and there's a possibility for all new projects, all new creativity, a whole new life, a whole new way of seeing the world each time we bleed and come out of that. I love the blood cycle, actually. I feel like I should do so much more teaching and sharing around all of that. I feel like there's so much wisdom there in each of us. And I've been given the opportunity for so many years now, right, to cycle through this portal of cycling and ovulation and bleeding and pregnancies and all kinds of things. And there's so much wisdom and so much subtle wisdom in each of those places in life. I'm so happy to be able to share that wisdom with my girls. And if nothing else, keeping it simple. So if you're looking for just tips or suggestions, keep it simple. You know, blood is life. Blood is the creator. We are united with source. So maybe that's not keeping it simple when we're talking about speaking with young girls. But blood is the opportunity for a refresh. Our bodies are not just shedding, right? That's what they teach. We're shedding our uterine lining. Yeah, true. We're shedding old energies. We're shedding what came before in that month. And we're making the opportunity for new growth. So much to talk about here. My daughter, the one that did receive her cycle while I was away, Belgium, she bled right on the new moon. And I was sure to point out to her just how brilliant her body is, that, you know, we can bleed anytime, we can ovulate anytime, it's all good, it's all normal. But for her first blood to bleed right on the new moon with the Earth, I reminded her how connected she is without even knowing it. And that's not a better or worse cycle, but that's the more typical cycle to bleed on the new moon. And we'll see. I explained to her that we're going to get into cycle tracking next. And that is what I have done with the other two girls. And they really loved it. And it really took off. We'll see how it goes with this one. But we'll see, because the first cycles are sometimes erratic. They're not often super regular. And that's okay. It's the body getting started on this wheel. It doesn't all flow like perfect clockwork. So I asked her to just start by keeping track of this first day of the first blood, and I'll help her. We'll go forward from there. We'll see if ovulation follows in 2 weeks, or if she has a longer cycle, which would be really, really normal. And I think something both of the other girls experience for about the first year. I am so excited to take her into cycle tracking and natural fertility awareness. Like I said, my other two girls are pretty good at it and could probably teach it to her. So I may have them help with that, but that will be the next phase or step. I don't feel a huge rush for that. I'm allowing her to just enjoy where she is, to be a woman. And that's how she put it, which I think is so cute and beautiful. To be a woman now is no small feat. And yeah, it's something our bodies do without our brains really having to control it. But allowing her to just be in that and to digest and feel all of these new feelings and, you know, to have her questions, which I'm sure will continue to come, around the way things work, around what kind of blood is normal and how long it lasts, and all of the questions that I've been just really excited and so honored to witness this week. Cycle tracking will be next, again, as we tiptoe into it and I read and feel where she's at, how best to communicate that to her. Of course, there are great books out there about cycles, and, you know, I think maybe she has an app already that her older sisters told her about. So, you know, that's a new thing, I think, is dealing with apps in the days of cycling. Of course, I never had to deal with an app, and I still don't use one. I don't really enjoy that. I have my own ways of keeping track of my body. I totally get how that's convenient. However, one thing we've definitely run into with the other girls and using apps for their cycles is the obvious, right? The cycle app telling them what their body is going to do or what the app thinks it did. And of course, it's easy to explain that the app is just a computer. It is going off this like normal, seemingly, you know, quote unquote, normal 28-day cycle, and that not everybody's body is like that. So the worst thing any woman can do is to trust the app over her own body. But unless she has the information to track her own body, it's tempting to just trust it. And of course, you know, as they get older and as we get into fertility and, you know, windows for fertility and all of that stuff around pregnancy or preventing pregnancy, it is super important, in my opinion, to have this information, whether or not there are other choices made down the road as far as, you know, birth control, which, of course, I am not in favor of hormonal birth control at all. That's another topic. So if you haven't seen The Business of Birth Control, oh my gosh, please watch it. My girls very much know that information and I think have seen the movie, but have also gotten my download from it. So without going into all of that right now, I think it is imperative that girls understand their bodies before they're even at the age of, you know, wanting to know more and, you know, to be in sexual relationships. I feel like it's imperative. It is imperative. So even if you, and you know, I didn't grow up this way either, even if you did not grow up with cycle awareness, maybe you don't even feel like you have a great grasp on it now, now's the time. Now's the time to learn more for your daughter's sake and pass on resources. And I think that's the future of powerful women, is knowing their bodies and knowing when they are fertile, not when the app says, not relying on artificial external means, but knowing when they're fertile and having it in their power to decide if or when they want to conceive. It really, you know, gets rid of a lot of the political conversations out there, which can still be relevant, but 90% of it, I think, comes back to knowing your own body. So that is my goal with my girls. And as they get into cycling more, as I said, we will talk about it. Along with cycle charting is just infusing these beliefs, of course, that womanhood is powerful, that our bodies are portals, that our wombs are sacred. And again, even if sexual relationships are not relevant right now, they will be. They will be later or at some point soon. So instilling this belief that we are powerful in our sexuality as well, that our wombs, our vulvas, our vaginas, all of it, they're all sacred, and that nobody gets access to these sacred parts of ourselves unless we decide, unless we want them there. And again, there's so much more to say about that. And I think a lot of that is, of course, communicable in different, more simple ways to even young children, that our bodies are our own, that, you know, nobody gets access, all of that. But there's something with the first blood, I think, that really brings it home, that our bodies are our temples, and they are not meant to be misused in any kind of way. They are meant to be respected in all kinds of ways. So that's another conversation. But ideas for celebration and such, I thought I would touch on just briefly. And taking, excuse me, a little pause here for myself. And also for you. I feel like there's a lot there. Whether you have daughters or not, it starts to bring up a lot for any woman, really, because we've all been there. We've all had our own experiences. And whether they've been great or horrible, we have the chance to try again. We have the chance to infiltrate a new generation with new beliefs, which is really exciting. Again, I was not celebrated as a new woman when I was a girl turning into a woman. But I do think there is opportunity and lots of ideas here. I don't have all the ideas. In fact, I will be transparent and say that in my mind, before my girls entered this phase, I had really grand expectations. As somebody that loves ceremony, as somebody that facilitates ceremony, I had really, elaborate expectations. The truth is, and this is so humbling and actually so beautiful and real, the truth is that my girls haven't wanted anything super witchy. They haven't wanted to cast a circle and, you know, bleed on the land, at least not yet. They've wanted their versions of celebration. And I say that because I think many of us that respect ritual might project upon our daughters. And I definitely did, until they humbled me and they wanted it the way they wanted it. And all I could do was respect that. And I have really come to love that, actually, because what's the first step in becoming a woman is to say what you want. And this last daughter, Belgium, of course, you know, didn't want any of my witchy things. I even took her to a crystal shop and, you know, offered to buy her like her set of first cards or whatever. And she did pick out a really beautiful necklace, and that was meaningful for her. And it felt really good for me to bestow that gift upon her. But there wasn't going to be all the, you know, pomp and circumstance that maybe you'd imagine. Your daughter, if you have one, or your niece or whoever, will decide. And again, it has felt really humbling and also important to respect that. and to allow her to lead. So what else did we do? I did say I wanted to celebrate with her, and she was very excited about that. So I told her she could invite any of the other sisters she wanted to. And so we did. Us group of girls, we went out to lunch at her place of choosing and just had fun and got some boba, of course. It's always fun. And again, this trip to the crystal shop, I did have the opportunity when, you know, putting this necklace on her to infuse it with my own wishes. And that felt really important to me. And hopefully, I think, felt nice for her. So when I put the necklace on, I just said, Belgium, I wish you all the joy and happiness and power and health, or whatever I said, something along those lines, of being a woman. And that felt amazing. And that was ceremony, right? Sometimes ceremony isn't sage and smoke and fire. Sometimes it is, but sometimes ceremony is just life. It's just life in this beautiful, intentional way. And again, that's something my daughters have taught me. So your daughters, your nieces, your whatever, granddaughters, will also teach you. I think when they are, you know, quote unquote, permitted to experience this in the way that feels right for them, it's really beautiful. And like I said, it's kind of humbling in some ways when maybe we have these grand expectations. And I remember reading a book years ago. I can't remember what it was, but there's a few books out there on, you know, girls and puberty and bleeding. Some really beautiful books, actually. But, you know, the ideas are really elaborate. And I love that for some girls. And maybe one of my next three will want some, you know, really amazing ceremony with red juice and wearing a red dress and all of this stuff. But so far, we've just had really ordinary, super extraordinary, special experiences to celebrate them. And I love that. I wouldn't have it any other way. The invitation, of course, remains to just feel into your own self. Taking this last bit of time here, if you haven't, to feel your own first blood experience. To let your body remember that in all of the beautiful and maybe other ways. I know for me, and even this last daughter having her first blood, it definitely brought up some grief. Not around her, I was so excited for her. But definitely my body was remembering what I didn't get. And, you know, I don't deny that. I don't think there's anything wrong or shameful or weird about that. My experience was really not beautiful. It really wasn't celebratory. So I am allowing myself to celebrate in my own body for that first blood that wasn't really recognized. And I may continue to do that with the rest of my daughters. I may continue to do that, who knows, for however long I need to, just speaking to my own child self, my own 13-year-old self that I think really missed out on that, but is now getting a chance to live vicariously in some ways and live just in support of this new vibration, of this new earth, of this new awareness and embracing of true womanhood. Thanks for listening. I can't wait to hear what you feel and think about this episode. So always be sure to email me if you'd like to reach out. I really do try to respond to each and every email, Marin@indiebirth.org. Have a beautiful week, sisters.